Welcome to Beyond Trauma, a podcast from therapists for clients about the healing journey. We hope this will be a resource of encouragement, comfort, insight, and understanding for you along this courageous process.
Hey guys, welcome back to Beyond Trauma Podcast, a guide for your healing journey. We're excited to be here today. We've got Melissa, Bridger, and myself, Jen, ready to talk to you about trauma and the question, how did I get here? So we want to explore the depths of the definition of trauma, what you guys may already know from hearing it from other therapists or people, and then maybe even looking at a new definition, a new way to identify with that concept and that idea of trauma. So Melissa, will you start us off by just walking us through the technical definition of what trauma is?
Yeah. So I think most people, when they think of trauma, they think of things like PTSD. And the examples that usually come to mind would be war veterans that have been in combat, sexual assault victims, things like that. So when therapists go to diagnose something like trauma, we're looking at the technical definition of what is PTSD, who qualifies for a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress, etc. And one of the things that you'll notice is that not everybody agrees, but what we're going to do is kind of walk you through all of the different ways that therapists look at this and share with you what our perspective is and what we see is most effective when we're working with our clients. But to start with, we want to share with you that there is a diagnostic manual that as therapists we have to use if we have to give a diagnosis. Now, for those of you that are in therapy, you may wonder, well, do I have a diagnosis? Maybe my therapist hasn't actually even talked to me about that. And there's a good reason for that. A lot of therapists don't actually feel it's necessary to give an official diagnosis in order to do good treatment. Mm-hmm. And most of us feel that way too. Do you guys agree?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And the reason why sometimes we have to is for a really practical reason. It's called insurance,
yes.
Right? And in order to get insurance to pay, we have to have a diagnostic code and it has to be really official and all that stuff. So if you have a diagnosis, just know that that's often because of that really practical reason. But the manual that we use for making the decision about whether somebody qualifies for a diagnosis of PTSD.
And PTSD being
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
There's several criteria that somebody has to meet in order to qualify for that diagnosis. And frankly, it's a pretty narrow set of criteria. Mm-hmm. It really excludes a lot of people's lived experience of what we consider to be trauma. But what that technical criteria is that therapists have to use is you've either had to be directly exposed to a trauma that is either death, threatened death, actual or threatened serious injury, an actual or threatened sexual violence, and it has to be either it personally happened to you, you saw it happen to somebody else right in front of you, or you learned that it happened to someone close to you, a relative, a close friend, etc. It also can be indirect exposure, meaning that it happened, you heard the story of it vicariously, usually through job. So, for instance, therapists can have indirect exposure by hearing traumatic stories. Paramedics, right? ER doctors, people like that, that are exposed to really intense situations. It didn't happen to them, they didn't see it happen, but they were vicariously exposed because of the work they have to do. So in order to get an official diagnosis of PTSD, it has to be that significant, right? And that personal and close to home in order for it to count.
Even historically, if we go back, I mean, that's a newer version of the DSM, the manual stating that.
Yep.
Historically, if we go back, it was even more narrow than that.
Right.
Even more rigid on it being like directly being exposed.
Right, that indirect exposure. Right.
So that's a fairly even like refined version, and then we're going to take it 10 steps further.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think in that as well as I like the word that you using of qualifying, because I think this is helping us know where a threshold is to where, okay, this person needs to receive treatment specifically for PTSD, or maybe another alternative route would be better, but it's that threshold idea.
Yeah. Like, is it bad enough?
Yeah. Qualifying.
That's right. Some of the other criteria that have to be there in order for them to qualify, is that the traumatic event is being re-experienced in some way. And that can be just through the memories coming up repeatedly. Nightmares is a really common one. Flashbacks, where there's an actual physical re-experiencing of the event in some way. Severe emotional distress and a physical reactivity. We use the word hypervigilance, right? Where our body is really jumpy, mm-hmm. right? It reacts very strongly to things in our environment, things that we would call an overreaction. Mm-hmm. So that has to be there. And then there's also a cognition, meaning a mental component and a mood component that has to be there. So negative thoughts and feelings that got worse after the trauma. Sometimes that shows up as memory difficulties is one that we see a lot of. Mm-hmm. People having a hard time remembering either details of the event, or even they're just struggling with short-term working memory in their day-to-day life. You know, it used to be easy to learn things, and now suddenly it's a lot harder. I used to be able to concentrate at work, and now suddenly I'm struggling to concentrate. Feeling isolated, difficulty feeling good, right? Like just having a pleasant mood or a good day is getting harder. And not feeling interested or excited in things that you used to feel interested and excited in, right? I used to love to play this sport, and now I can't bring myself to do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel fun anymore at all. Also, we talked about the hypervigilance, but also the startle reaction is there. And that's showing us the symptoms that are starting to happen in the nervous system. Difficulty sleeping is a really common one. And then here's another thing that is tricky as a clinician, is that all of that has to last for more than 1 month before you officially qualify for that diagnosis. And the symptoms have to be bad enough that there is a true functional impairment, right? So that it has gotten bad enough that you are no longer functioning well in your day-to-day life. It's disrupting your work. Mm-hmm. It's disrupting your physical health. You're now having marital issues or parenting issues as a result of it. So it has to get to that degree before someone actually is going to qualify for an official diagnosis of PTSD.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, as I hear you run through those, I've read that how many times before, right. But I've so much like, I don't want to say dismissed it, but like
you can
set it aside because it's so narrow and specific. And what we know is that like the impact of trauma on any level can have a major impact without meeting that criteria,
exactly. Right.
And
yeah,
really deserves exactly right. to be seen and noticed and spoken to, even if it doesn't meet that specific criteria.
Right.
An easy example of that would be a trauma that we all experienced together, which was 9/11.
Yeah.
Right? So previous to that addition of the indirect exposure, that would not have qualified anybody, mm-hmm. right? Well, okay, so now we add in the indirect exposure to that. So people that somehow were up close and personal with the aftermath would qualify, but nobody else would. If we just saw it on TV, that wouldn't qualify. And yet we had people, you know, how many clients come in, they're still having nightmares, they're still having flashbacks of that. They're talking about it. It left a major, major impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, as a society as a whole, there was a major impact that happened.
What we're going through
what
now.
What we're going through
that's
now
right.
in the
everything
pandemic.
We're
yes.
facing right now with the pandemic.
Recording
yes.
it here in 2020.
Yeah, yes. absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Happening in real time.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah. I think one thing, Jen, I appreciated you mentioning that it is narrow in that way, and that a lot of clinicians have a similar response in that they move towards their own understanding or perhaps only lean on the diagnostic manual when they need to do consultation or to refer out for a med consult or mm-hmm. to a doctor of some kind to get a medical intervention as well. And I think in response to that, the therapeutic community has come up with different ways of approaching mm-hmm. their definition of what is trauma. Because, you know, as someone who has gone through trauma, let's say you're not meeting those criteria, so then you're supposed to say, oh, well, I guess I don't have trauma, mm-hmm. so I got to keep looking for something else to explain why I'm going through what I'm going through.
And I think that that's exactly why this is our first episode.
Yes.
Right? Because
this is how do I get here?
Yeah. Like some of you guys might be wondering, like, well, why are you talking about this one diagnosis out of all of the other diagnoses that are possible? And the answer to that is because we believe that this is how everybody gets there. Like this
right.
is the genesis of all symptoms.
All
in one
symptoms.
Way or another.
And I want to reiterate that because that is something that bears repeating.
Yes.
Is that there is not a symptom that originates from something that wasn't a trauma.
Right.
Now, if that's startling to anyone, yes, or
which it can be,
you feel your yeah. system saying like no, like I'm
not
traumatized.
Traumatized.
Yeah. Not
yeah.
I.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sit patiently with us.
Yes.
And hear the rest of this, because I think as we go a little bit deeper into how we would define it,
yes,
it can start to make a lot more sense. So yes, that big idea can feel like a lot, but it can be a powerful switch.
Absolutely.
When we can start to see it differently.
Yeah, and you might feel as if once moving into this definition of trauma that we're going to share, and then how we see that being rooted into our treatment, it might feel like a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
In
yeah.
some sense that, oh, now...
Hopefully it'll feel like a relief.
Yeah, like
it
a
makes
breath,
sense of things
a fresh air, yeah,
have been very, very confusing.
Thank you for seeing me.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. In that way. Yeah, so the therapeutic community has seen quite an evolution in non-diagnostic language towards what is trauma. And so one of the concepts that came out on the side of that diagnostic language is the difference between a big T trauma and a little T trauma. This is to kind of help therapists give a distinction for increasing clients' understanding of what happened to them and how it might be impacting them now. So the big trauma would kind of bear some resemblance to the PTSD, the DSM language of, you know, this is a very significant
life-threatening
violent event,
yes,
that happened to you or that happened to someone you know or that you became aware of. And then to answer that question, well, what about what falls outside of that? Well, that would be what some would call the little T traumas. These can be really anything depending on who is experiencing it. Trauma is experienced, that little T trauma would be talked about as being experienced differently by different people,
mm-hmm,
and what might be overwhelming to someone might not be to another, and so it kind of just sought to meet the person where they were at, validate their experience, and then give them something to come into therapy knowing the direction of.
Right.
I think that piece of what someone might see or experience as trauma, someone else may not.
Right.
That comparison piece as a client, or, you know, it's easy to look at that and say, well, my situation isn't trauma because
yeah,
they also went through it and they're fine, or they're, you know, like it wasn't trauma. It's not as bad as this other person's
right
experience.
Right.
But to really say, like, we're just going to look at our individual experience and how our system processed it.
Yeah.
That's how we determine.
And
that's,
I think,
right,
we do that comparison even within our own stories.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So if we
yeah
have like something that we would consider a big T trauma, then we end up comparing all the other events of our lives to that and saying, well, it wasn't as bad as that. And I got through that okay,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
I managed that really awful illness or that death scare or whatever, and that's not bothering me. So why is this thing bothering me?
Yeah.
Right? Why am I upset about this? Why am I having depression or anxiety symptoms?
Right.
Focused
I've
on this issue.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've gone through
right
worse. And we end up diminishing and minimizing our own experience.
Invalidating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we don't understand that,
mm-hmm,
sometimes those things are just as or more impactful than the big stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The big T, it's like in your face.
So obvious.
Yeah,
right.
This is trauma. And I can call it trauma.
Right.
The little T.
And
scream.
Other people, yeah,
here,
other people will agree with me.
Yeah.
That it's
there's
trauma.
No question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And really, I think for me, what helps understand what I'm looking for in understanding trauma and how we work with it in the room is what is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
That, as we'll kind of keep talking, has been the grounds for what has come out in the contemporary therapy scene as a better understanding of just looking at what is overwhelming to the person where they were at, regardless of time, regardless of previous experience, just what was overwhelming to you. And that being something that, sorry, this is just coming to me now of a thought, but there's something within counseling theory that's called the diathesis stress model. And if you think of a cup of water, and depending on where that water is filled up to in the cup, the space that is left is how much tolerance you have for what might come to overflow. And that overflow is our feeling of overwhelm. So some,
mm-hmm,
people have less water in the cup. Some people have more water in the cup. And as more water gets added to it, which these are stressful experiences, things that might be overwhelming, they start to overflow that cup. And that being a good kind of representation of some things might overwhelm you, some things might not. Mm-hmm. And that might be different to other people.
And it might also be different across your lifespan.
Absolutely.
Depending on where, right. how much room you have at the time.
That's right. And what we're learning from a lot of the research within the nervous system and polyvagal theory in particular is that co-regulation can actually lower the amount of water that's in the cup to start. So that can also help you return back to safety in that way.
So let's just highlight that right there. Through therapy, mm-hmm. and we can talk about all those big giant words you just said,
yes.
and what that means, but like through therapy, we can decrease the amount of water we start with. Like, mm-hmm. we don't have to live our lives
right on
just
the
trying to keep it yeah. from overflowing
yeah.
and just barely skimming the top. Like, we can actually go in deeper when we understand what it is that determines how much water we have.
Yeah, that's right.
And start to decrease that.
Yeah, I really like
so,
that analogy.
Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Motivating mm-hmm. and like filled with hope.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so to get to the foundation for me of where I see a helpful definition for trauma was out of a article from Duros and Crowley in 2014. They published an article called The Body Comes to Therapy Too. And I love that title, number
yes,
one.
Yes,
just
you.
Jealous that they found it first. But they define trauma in a way that I have not heard before. And so I thought it was very powerful. They define trauma as whenever something comes into our space, into our internal space, that is too much too soon, too much for too long, or too little for too long. And I think that just really opens up our understanding of what could be considered trauma or overwhelming to us.
Mm-hmm.
Too much for too long, mm-hmm. too much too soon, or too little for too long.
Let's give an example of each of those. Like, what would be trauma that is too much too long?
Yeah, well, so to start, the too much too soon, I think it is what people would, you know, kind of as we said, no one would doubt that that was traumatic. So a car accident, mm-hmm. a violent experience of some kind interpersonally, an abuse of some kind, that too much too soon. You know, there wasn't space at all to process what was happening in that
yes.
amount of time.
Mm-hmm. That could also have to do with the age of the person.
Absolutely.
Right, that too soon to me speaks of they weren't ready to handle that because
right.
of how old they were,
yeah.
whether that be physically or emotionally or
yes.
mentally.
Yes.
If it was too much to process too early in their life, you can have the same impact.
Yeah.
If I'm 8 years old and responsible for my three little siblings.
That's right.
Not
yeah.
even like from a neglect standpoint of parents aren't there, but
yeah.
I have a single mom who says, I really need you to help out.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you've
right.
got to help carry the weight around here.
Too much
I'm
responsibility.
Eight.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Wherein those are the stories that you typically hear people scoff at the idea that that was traumatic.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who has that story, they're going to carry a lot of responsibility
through their whole life.
Yeah, in themselves, mm-hmm. and just say, "No, I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't traumatic. I figured it out."
Yeah.
And may
I,
even
and
feel
I
proud.
Yeah,
yeah,
we're
like
here. I took care of those kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I'm successful and I take care of all these other things in my
yeah,
life.
Yeah, not to
and
mention.
And why am
but,
I having panic attacks?
Yeah, and anxiety too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm having trouble not washing my hands all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, so whatever it might be manifesting as. But yeah, so that too much too soon is kind of what people would associate with obvious traumatic experiences or obviously overwhelming experiences. Then you've got the too much for too long. So these I would associate just at a gut level with something that was mildly distressing, but it lasted so long. It could be even moderately distressing that lasted too long, but it didn't fall into that first category of too much too soon. And so it's too much for too long. So this could be something like a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That has some aggressive tendencies to it or just overly disrespectful or maybe edging on abusive that just lasts long enough to overflow your cup in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have other examples that come to your mind?
I was just thinking of like financial difficulties.
Oh, that's a great
right?
one.
Right? I can
yeah.
be, you know, in an uncomfortable financial position for a month or two and maybe I'm okay, but if that goes on
for
6 months, a year, a couple years, and every single month I'm scrambling
Throughout my childhood.
I could have handled that for a short amount of time and bounced back pretty easily, but that begins to erode so quickly because of the, just the constant stress. It's like that version of it with the analogy with the water in the cup, it's the slow drip that never ends.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
And
eventually it'll overflow.
Yeah, and I think that can also be some people's experience of their childhood, kind of as you were saying with financially, but even lack of attention or something like that, where it was too much, too long, or into that final category of too little
too long.
Yeah, so those two kind of working in tandem to give validation to all experience in that way of not having a care provider's attention for a moment isn't anything we can't come back from, but you extend that out to a three-year-old not having a loving attention, an affectionate presence for a month, 6 months, maybe their entire childhood, you're going to have some really pervasive problems that come out of that.
It even comes to mind in that of, you know, growing up in a home where feelings aren't okay. You know, maybe all of my needs are met and mom and dad are physically present and we have really nice things and get to do a lot of great stuff, but my feelings aren't okay. We don't talk about emotion. That's
it's not okay to cry. It's not okay to express anger.
Yeah, and so all of that, so that definition is one that I've come to really appreciate, and it's kind of changed how I view, or perhaps just given language to what I intuitively knew in reading the DSM and saying, well, that's pretty rigid, and a black and white understanding.
There's
like that.
There's gotta be more.
Yeah, seriously, like, so I don't have trauma, really, you know? Like,
then why do I feel the way?
Like, I will show you, you know,
Well, with this other definition, I sit here and think, okay, now I could list it all out, and these are these life experiences that were overwhelming. They were a lot, and not to say that, you know, I'm not... You know, I'm falling apart as a human, but they have had an impact on how I see the world, how I see myself, how I manage stress, how I manage relationships. Like, they influence those.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's a huge shift that has occurred just culturally when it comes to people's understanding of what therapy is for. Because for a long time, therapy was for the people that were not functioning. You're like, it's either go to therapy or you can't work anymore. You're going to a institution of some kind. You have to be medicated, right? It had to be so severe before anybody would consider getting help of any kind. But there's been a real shift in people's understanding of when they need help, right? And when help might be appropriate. And now there's this openness to this idea that I deserve help, even if I'm okay, right? Like, even if I'm functioning okay, but just to help me have more life satisfaction.
That's right.
To help me get more out of my relationships, to help me feel, you know, good in what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, to not have to expend energy managing depression, managing, you know, anxiety, bouts of anxiety every once in a while, that I want to put my energy towards other things and I deserve to get help to resolve these issues that are causing me problems. And I think that shift is beautiful because now we actually get clients coming in and saying, I'm mostly okay,
but I just want to
work on this a little bit. I want to be able to, you know, do this and do it with ease, or, you know, I want to go back to school and not be anxious, right? So it's more about these self-care goals and self-optimization goals rather than I only do this if it's my last resort.
One final thread before it all separates.
Exactly. Like, I'm only here because my wife made me come.
It's
either this or divorce.
That
still happens sometimes too, guys, and that's okay.
The cultural revolution isn't done yet.
We're in process. We're always in process.
It's part of our mission.
Eventually, it'll just be mandatory that everybody goes to therapy for at least a year of their life, just to make sure that they're all straightened out.
I feel like that answers our question for the episode, is do I need therapy?
And our answer is, why not?
Absolutely.
And I think the shift is this. Everybody deserves help. Right? It doesn't even matter.
It's not about need.
It's not about whether it's bad enough for you to get help. It's that you deserve assistance. You deserve a clear mirror.
Yeah, and that's the point that I work towards getting to with all of my clients. And part of... You know, so I have that theoretical understanding of what trauma is, but on a very practical level, we're talking about the development of a human being here.
Right.
the people that we're seeing in therapy, and if you're out there reflecting on your life, as I'm sure you are, just mm-hmm. hearing the way we're talking, knowing that that shaped you into the person you are today, that means that there's significant points that are meaningful, valuable, and we need to honor that in talking about it and recognizing what it did. So to me, this is really about shaping nervous systems.
Yes.
I think that point alone is from that Drewis and Crowley article of too much too soon, too much too long, or too little for too long. That is having direct molding, you know, capacity yes. on our nervous system.
So I think, you know, a thing that just really crystallized the importance of that for me was becoming a mom. Mm. And basically when you have a child, you are handed a tiny undeveloped nervous system wrapped in a blanket.
Yep.
And says, here, shape a human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the tools that we use to create that shaping, we can't use words.
Right.
Right? Which we like to use words in therapy. However, you're going to hear us talk a lot about other ways of shaping nervous systems. And so when you're thinking about the negative impact, yes, words have an impact. Those experiences have an impact. But it also matters what your home felt like. Mm-hmm. Like what was the environment that your nervous system was developing in on yeah. a day-to-day basis? Was it soothing? Was it fun? Was it nurturing? Or yeah. was it anxiety?
Is there a lot of hidden yeah. rules that you
yeah.
had to follow?
Yeah. Did yeah. it feel like there was, you know, emotional landmines everywhere and right. you had to walk on eggshells all the time?
Yeah.
And that absolutely creates a pattern for our nervous system yeah. for the rest of our life.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So yeah. people, because of that, can be predisposed to an anxious style of a nervous system
yeah.
or a depressive style of a nervous system.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's what we mean by saying that these traumas are the root of every symptom
yeah.
that we see as therapists.
And I think if you're listening to us saying, you know, why are we talking about my nervous system? Isn't that what keeps me from getting a cold? And so I think sometimes we gloss over that. Maybe we should say what it is.
Right. But what we mean by that.
Yeah, what we mean by that. So your nervous system is responding to things that you don't even know are in your environment. Your nervous system is also helping you and without your awareness, automate your body to respond to whatever is in your environment. And
all
that includes externally and internally.
Yes.
So our internal environment of, I'm feeling this way, oh, I'm hungry, I'm, you know, or I'm feeling anxious,
headache.
Why
I
am I that
ache.
Way? Yeah. Your nervous system is what is basically, you know, pulling the strings of your body, to use the puppet analogy.
Mm-hmm.
The nervous system is what is making all of that happen. So if you think back to our definition of trauma and the language we've used, that is to say your nervous system is being shaped, what we're really talking about is your response, or perhaps your understanding, and then your response of what is happening in your environment can actually be warped.
Right.
And it's that warping, that shaping of the nervous system that will lead you to a response that you may not be conscious of, or that you may have no choice of, and, mm-hmm. and you just find yourself doing it. I think the DSM diagnosis of PTSD gives a lot of language to that, of these flashbacks
mm-hmm.
or these avoidance of places
right.
that you couldn't go
the
to.
The hypervigilance.
Absolutely.
Yes, the nightmares. All of that
yeah.
is showing us that this is a nervous system in distress.
Right.
This is a nervous system that
SOS.
Is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
yeah.
Send
things
save.
Are not okay
yeah.
in here. Yeah.
I need help.
Yes. Yeah.
yeah.
And I think, you know, just as people are thinking about their own stories or people that they know, this begins to answer all kinds of different problems that we see. You know, why does someone struggle with addiction? Because substances help us regulate our nervous system.
That's right.
They calm us.
It's a lifeline.
Yeah. Why are we overeating? Well, because food tastes good and it helps our nervous system calm down.
Why am I not eating?
Why am I not eating?
Control.
Why am I watching 8 hours of Netflix?
That's right.
Why am I buying so much on Amazon, Bridger?
Yeah, exactly. We'll
that's
talk about
relatable.
That. No. Don't talk about that.
Sorry. Too many personal
that's an
examples.
Acceptable addiction.
Right.
No, that's
true. Right. Chocolate, wine, what?
Yeah. Boyfriends, girlfriends.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't
cool.
matter. But
yeah.
I think like we're able to see all of these patterns of behavior as the body's attempt to
that's
regulate
right.
and calm a nervous system that is struggling.
That's right.
That is overwhelmed for whatever reason, and it's looking for a way to calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to connect our thinking here.
Sorry,
go ahead. But just to connect our thinking here, you know, we started the episode by saying a big scary sentence that is any symptom finds its root
in a trauma.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So as we've worked on our definition of trauma and what that means, and then mentioned the shaping of the nervous system, this is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. When the nervous system is faced with overwhelming events, whether it be, as we said in our definition, too much too soon, too much too long, or too little for too long, it is going to have patterned ways of responding mm-hmm. that are conditioned. You know, if you think of a muscle, you do a workout and it gets bigger. Well, your nervous system is a lot like that in That's a lot right. of ways. You start to fall into a rut of responses that are sometimes out of your consciousness, but the journey of therapy then is to start to address what those conditioned responses are and to ask, is this how I want to continue living mm-hmm. my life?
And it's not just about stopping that pattern.
Right.
It's about understanding why did this yeah. make sense at the time? Why yeah. was this literally the right choice at the yeah. time to help me survive? And bringing a lot of self-compassion
That's
to that.
Right. Yeah.
And gently offering new opportunities for the body and the nervous system yeah. to try something new.
That's right.
And I think one of my favorite parts of being a therapist is that we get to offer a safe space for someone to try something new.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. To just do a little experiment and see what would it be like if instead of doing that thing that you always do, instead of getting defensive, instead of going into argument, or instead of immediately going into shame, what if I just stayed right here? Sorry about the sirens, guys. What if I just stayed right here and felt what I was feeling and trusted that this might be a safe experience? And as therapists, part of what we get to do is kind of hold that space for people and make sure that it stays safe, and that if things get tricky or things get emotionally difficult, that you have somebody there to guide you through that in a really gentle and safe way. And to me, those are the days that it just is like, oh my gosh, I love my
this
job.
This is the work.
This is
yeah,
the best.
This is amazing.
Telling people that they need to stop doing something is like my least favorite
so
day.
So disinteresting to me. Yeah.
I'm over it, right?
Yeah.
I've had to do that for a lot of years when I worked in a drug court program. Nowadays, I would much rather talk about the why
yeah.
and talk about the root issue that is bringing all of these symptoms up, because it always lets us come to the situation with deep compassion.
Yes.
And also, it lets us come with tremendous hope, because it's not about just stopping the behavior and how successful you're going to be at that or not. It's about really understanding how this got created in you.
I feel like too often we accept those patterns that we're talking about is just, that's just who we are.
Yeah.
I'm just a worrier.
It's my lot in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Can't change it.
Come by it naturally.
Or my whole family's like this.
Right.
I hear that a lot too.
Yes.
All the women in my family
are
so, yeah.
It's a genetic
really?
I get it from my dad.
So all
yeah.
I think there is, well, you have generational trauma
right.
then.
Yeah.
This pattern was literally passed
Wait,
down to you.
Yes. Past my life?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this idea that's, well, I've been this way as long as I can remember, so this
yeah.
is just what I have to live with.
Like, yeah.
this is what my life is.
Right.
And when we come to that acceptance, there isn't a lot of hope in therapy.
Right.
Or it's all focused on, how do I just manage myself
right.
in this way?
How can I find any joy now?
Yeah. How
right.
do I tolerate
yeah.
and just manage and regulate the best I can?
Yeah.
Versus when we're looking at, if it ties back to a trauma, which a trauma is really a life experience that is overwhelming, therefore your brain stores it differently.
Yeah, that's right.
That means we can go back to that experience and work on the reprogramming, the storage of it
mm-hmm.
while shaping the nervous system.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that definition of trauma, because it lets us see, it lets us look at kind of Melissa, what you were saying, of some of those responses that we chose at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to honor those choices. Like we're saying, we're not saying stop this behavior, and when we look for the why, we're looking at what made that a good choice at the time
right.
to choose food,
right.
to control your nervous system,
mm-hmm.
to choose a dating site or alcohol
mm-hmm.
or depression
mm-hmm.
or anger, anxiety, because it was the best you could do at the time.
Right.
That is such a foundational understanding for the work we do with our clients, because that's the trust that we have of the body to
right.
do what it can. The problem is that it's no longer the best thing to do.
Yeah.
It's now causing us much more pain than helping us.
Mm-hmm.
And so therapy, then, Jen, to your point, it's do we want to continue that? Because we don't have to.
Yeah, there's another option.
We don't have to.
And I think that's one of the first things that we often talk with clients about is there is another option.
There's hope.
We don't have to band-aid this and say you're going to have to battle this depression the rest of your life. You're going to have to, you know, use medication to manage your anxiety the rest of your life. Although all of us really support medication. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
About that.
Advocates.
I'm in a place.
100%. Don't hear
me
say
talk
that.
About, yeah. We will talk about the proper use of medication because it's important. But I think that, you know, when we're talking to clients about the journey, right, the beginning, middle, and end of therapy, it's so easy for me to speak sincerely from a place of absolute hope that things can get better.
And trust in it. Yeah,
yes. Absolutely. And I mean, I share this with clients a lot. Like, I have that story,
right?
Like, I had a decimated nervous system. Things were not going well. I technically did qualify for the full-on PTSD DSM-5 diagnosis. And the journey to come back from that and heal a nervous system, I know in my bones that it's possible.
Yeah.
And I think that that's so powerful to be able to share with people and say, if this body could heal, if like if this dysregulated nervous system that was using anything and everything, especially Netflix and anyway, all my, you know, very creative ways. I was doing the best I could at the time, guys.
Amen. Yes, you were.
And it was, right? And but to know just how far it's possible to really come as far as what a nervous system is able to learn and relearn how to do. And thank God for all of my people that, you know, co-regulated me through that whole experience and re-taught my nervous system how to relax and believe that I am safe in my life now. And once that felt really true, there was a literal physical shift that happened. For me, all my stuff was so somatic. And to feel the shift that literally happens in your body. All those physical symptoms that you're having and you're wondering what the heck
all
they're about, your migraines are about this.
Yeah.
Your constant stomach aches are about this. Your fibromyalgia, likely about this. All of those
IBS.
Weird, IBS, absolutely. All of those symptoms for me, the majority of those are completely gone since having all of this.
Did you
treated.
Say gone?
Gone. I don't get migraines anymore. I haven't had one in years. I used to get them, you guys, ibuprofen every other day. Absolutely.
Every other day.
Every other day. Had to. That's how I survived.
No more.
Pain. All day long. Every day.
I don't know if you're listening to this and with your jaw on the floor. I've heard her say that before, but it still makes my jaw fall to the floor. Because it's beautiful. That's the hope of therapy.
Yeah. And I think for me, like, I do speak from that place of, like, this is my lived story. And it matters so much to me that other people know you do not have to put up with anybody ever telling you that you are limited by your current state. Right?
Yeah.
You are healable. You are not broken beyond repair. If anybody has ever suggested that to you, well, I won't tell you what I think about them, but just know that it's not true. I'm preaching slightly. I love you all. If you have a story, please know. Like, that's why I'm so passionate about this, because I want people to know that there's hope.
Yes. And from a therapist's perspective, I think throughout my training and then in my experience, therapists deal with this differently. And so as you're considering going into therapy, or if you're hearing this, or whatever you might be thinking, wherever you're at in your journey, just know that the therapist does really matter.
It does.
Of who you choose and who you trust to do this
They have to be
sacred
right
work
fit.
With you.
Yes.
I mean, it really is in that way.
Well, and if you think about what we were talking about earlier, how much the therapist is there holding that safe space for you while you try and experiment a new way of existing in the world. If you don't feel safe with your therapist, then it's really hard to feel like you can run those experiments and try something new and take the risk of existing in yourself in a brand new way.
Right.
So yes, just know, I mean, it takes time. Every therapeutic relationship, we're going to build that relationship slowly and gently, but there is absolutely room to interview people and find the right fit.
Take time.
The details of how to find that right guide.
Yeah.
We're going to use those words, therapist and guide, interchangeably. Like, a therapist is really part of guiding you through this journey.
Yes.
And we'll talk about how to find that. I think that's episodes to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of, I think I'm with my friends here recording this, so I think I can speak for a natural aversion that all of us have to what we kind of call whack-a-mole therapy, which is smashing one symptom to find another one to replace it.
Right. And never dealing with the root.
Right. I don't want you to be angry anymore, so I'm going to teach you how to be anxious so that you control your
anger. Anger management skills.
Yeah. Behavioral modification.
Right.
So know that that isn't what we're talking about either, and we'll kind of show our cards there as well.
Right.
But as I mentioned earlier, a sacred space where a guide is one of the most important parts of this.
Agreed.
And finding one that resonates with you, has a similar vision of what you want to accomplish, and a way to get there that is honoring to your process and loving and compassionate the entire way, that's a good fit with a therapist. But we will talk a lot more about that.
Yeah, how to find that person and how to know when you found the right one.
Yeah, and if you can't, what to do.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
So I hope all of this material just opens your minds and helps start you kind of on the exploring process. I also want to acknowledge that this could be slightly like dysregulating.
Sort of overwhelming.
And overwhelming.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that someone told me that I had PTSD. It was not a pretty moment, to be honest. I was
really
a little upset.
The first time I heard trauma redefined, I played back my life.
Yeah. Interesting how many things came forward to say me.
Yeah, just say like, oh, that and that, you know, and started this list. And I just did it again as we're recording this, you know, just relating. And so I'm sitting here thinking, those of you who are listening, that might be happening to you right now. Yeah, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I also want to just maybe talk through a moment of like re-regulating that.
Yeah.
I know this wasn't part of my original
plan.
No,
I love
but, like,
it. Please.
It's important.
I know that it happens.
How do we get regrounded and maybe set some of those things back aside where they belong in a temporary holding place where we can go about our day and continue to function without that awareness on the forefront of our minds, and then know that we can come back to that when it's safe and pull it back out with someone we can trust and really work on that together.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to set that aside.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Give yourself the space and the care to set it aside.
Yeah. And immediately after this episode, there will be a brief recording that you guys can listen to of something called the container exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a brief recording that will walk through what Jen is talking about, where it lets you take all of the material that may have come up while you're listening to us talk and just put it in a safe place temporarily so you can revisit it later.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to pick our moment, right? And the most important thing is that we're paying attention to ourselves and knowing, is now a good time to really address this, or do I need to wait?
Yeah.
It is really normal though that when this kind of stuff gets stirred up, that sometimes it's hard to put it away.
Yeah.
So the container exercise is a way to make that really concrete. And there's other skills that you can use as well. If you know self-regulation skills, deep breathing, go for a walk, all of that kind of stuff. But we're going to include that exercise so that you guys can use that.
Definitely. Yeah. So we hope that you have enjoyed this episode of Beyond Trauma. And if you'd like to stay connected with us, you can follow us on our social media. That's Beyond Trauma Podcast. And we also have a Patreon for this podcast, which is patreon.com/Beyond Trauma Podcast. And that is a great way not only to stay connected and up to date with new and additional resources, but it also helps us support this financially, which is huge. Mm-hmm. We do this for free right now. And so we're hoping that as it starts to become helpful and relevant to more people, that we will get a bigger family in that way.
Yeah. And the nice thing about Patreon, too, is it's a space for us to share more resources
with
you guys. So our goal is that we'll be adding content to that regularly. And if you listen to that container exercise, it's those kinds of materials that will be on there, along with a lot
more
conversations. Just things that we find helpful for clients, things that we want you guys to have access to. So go check that out, patreon.com/beyondtraumapodcast.
Yeah, that's right. So, all right, we will talk to you guys again soon. Safe journeys, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Beyond Trauma, a psychotherapy podcast from therapists for clients about the journey of trauma recovery. While resources like this can be helpful, they should never take the place of or be used as therapy. We encourage you to find a trauma-informed therapist in your area to be your guide in this healing journey. Take a minute to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Spotify, and we would appreciate it if you could leave us a review. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at beyondtraumapodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in.